You've tuned in to the Community Character Hour. A quick note about the audio in this episode. I forgot to turn on my microphone for about the first 5 to 10 minutes of this show, so it's going to sound just a little weird at the beginning. I've tried my best to clean that up and redub it a little bit here for the rebroadcast, and it all sounds perfectly normal just after a little oddness at the beginning. Oddness is appropriate, though. This was our Halloween show. We started off with a ghost story from Wallace, Idaho in 1904, before we dive into our main topic for the day.
Two politicians in Wallace were out late one night on business. Not drinking, they assured the press, driving their team of horses home. The team they were driving was traveling at a fair clip along a level road when suddenly an object in white, in the form of a thoroughbred, glided from the field through a barbed wire fence into the road a short distance in front of the team. It did not clear the wire by jumping, but as though it were formed of vapor, and the specter swept through the obstruction without making the least noise. It stood in the center of the road facing the team. Seeing no other option, the two men urged the horses forward, but however close their team approached, the specter stepped back in equal measure, neither increasing nor decreasing the distance between them. After 200 yards, it passed tranquilly through the wire fence and disappeared.
Ooh.
Okay. Well, what do you make of that, Hannah? I would say that sounds like fog, maybe, to me.
In the form of a thoroughbred?
Well,
they were able to identify it was a thoroughbred, not just any mere old nag.
No. okay. So that's a little spooky, for sure. There may be some more ghost stories to come as this hour progresses, but you are listening to the Community Character Hour. This is an hour of radio once a month, although we air it more often than that, but this is a fresh one, and we're talking with Hannah Combs, Executive Director of the Monmouth County Historical Society Museum, and Heather Upton, who is the Arts and Historic Preservation Planner for the City of San Bernardino. And today we're continuing a conversation that we began last month, and we're talking about the Long Bridge. If you've been here even for 5 minutes, chances are you know what the Long Bridge is and where it is. But what we talked about last time was the first and second wooden Long Bridges, and that was now we come more into the modern era. Let's talk about that third bridge.
Indeed, yes. As we mentioned last time, the first and second wooden long bridges were rife with dangerous structural issues. Several fires collapsed parts of the bridge, and a state truck nearly fell through the bottom of the bridge when a stringer cracked. During World War II, a higher than anticipated number of heavier vehicles crossed the bridge. Remember, they were collecting and shipping huge loads of scrap metal for the war effort, which took a toll on the structure. Many repairs were made, but by 1956, it was time to discuss plans for replacing the bridge.
Yeah, and local officials did not foresee what a huge tourist attraction the wooden bridge itself would become. By the 1950s, the structure had earned fame throughout the nation. Tourists came to Sandpoint just to drive over the scenic span. So when officials got serious about replacing the wooden bridge, there were sporadic protests against raising the rickety structure.
But this time, it was largely out of local leaders' hands. The construction of the third bridge was led by the Army Corps of Engineers, leaving the squabbling over expenses and other details behind the doors of their offices and not in Sandpoint City Hall. It was certainly less of a headache for local leaders, but it also means we know much less about how the project was planned and managed. The north end of the bridge was moved from First Avenue to its current position next to the rail line, and a fill section at the north end of the span was built out to its current length, which goes nearly a mile into the river. The third bridge was built out of over 7,000 tons of concrete and steel and was shortened in length to 5,897 feet, losing the distinction of longest wooden bridge in the world. It cost $2 million to build.
In the lives of Mr. and Mrs. Ospreay, who nested atop the Long Bridge, had been humorously chronicled in the newspaper for 5 years by the time the third bridge was built. In 1956, they reported that the ornithological family have taken leave of their home. For years, it had been up atop of the lone piling on the upstream side of the Long Bridge, now being dismantled. Modern progress has proved too much of a hazard to raising a family. The staccato din of jackhammers beat upon the peaceful air.
The poor Ospreay. They found a new home eventually. you said dismantled. What happened to the wooden Long Bridge? You don't really see it, coming out of First Avenue today.
Right, yeah. There aren't really, well, correct us if we're wrong, but I don't believe there are any pilings that can still be seen today. So though it was assumed to have rot issues when it was dissembled, many of the pilings from the wooden bridge were found to be, as they said, as solid as the day they were driven. Many of the timbers from the wooden Long Bridge were repurposed for other building projects in town. The Leo Hadley shooting range in Sandpoint still has timbers from the old Long Bridge inside its walls.
Oh, that's cool.
Very fun.
And if anyone knows of any other buildings that still have timbers from the Long Bridge, we would love to know at the museum.
I've never been in the Leo Hadley range. Is it like you can visibly see the wood, or that it's built of it and it's covered by the wall now?
I have to admit, I have not been in there either. I know the exterior of the building is concrete block,
yeah.
And I assume the inside is as well. So the timbers are probably kind of buried in between two layers of concrete. But I know there are people out there who would know for sure.
such an interesting, just in terms of like building history, that people would take these, you know, take the bridge and build new construction,
yeah.
With, you know, reuse timbers, and not necessarily to be fashionable or stylish, but because it's.
Right. Yeah. And I've seen many stories of that kind of salvage project. If one big structure comes down and the materials are still good, mm-hmm. people would reuse them. And often they'd get kind of scattered all over town for different building projects.
I suppose cost was always an issue. And, mm-hmm. you know, the tight grain on that lumber,
right.
You can't beat it.
Yeah.
The earlier the tree, the
vertical grain, larch, yes. Things like that. And uh-huh. I'm trying to remember what type of wood these pilings were built out of. But honestly, anything cut back then was going to be really good quality wood.
Yeah. I mean, you kind of imagine maybe it's cedar because it's mm-hmm. you know, resistant to rot. But mm-hmm. who knows? That'd be really quite something if it was a cedar bridge. Now we've got this third bridge up.
Mm-hmm.
Is it true, though, that that third bridge that was built still stands, but it's not the one we drive on?
That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah. Reasons cited for building the fourth and current Long Bridge were an increased loading requirement of modern traffic and a desire to provide lanes for bicycle and pedestrian traffic, which the third bridge was too narrow to do safely. Now, instead of building our current bridge with bike lanes on it, the easiest way to do this was to build a new bridge alongside the old one and decommission but retain the third bridge for walking, biking, and fishing. This way, pedestrians would be distanced from the dangers of automobiles. Like the previous bridges, the fourth bridge has over 1,000 pilings. And though the water is at most 23 feet deep below the bridge, some of the pilings are driven 130 feet into the riverbed.
I'm going to interrupt at this point and say that we got a message from a listener. Saying that there are pilings from the deconstructed bridge still visible at low water, and they may extend clear across the river, but we don't know about that.
Amazing.
Excellent.
Yeah, low water, you can still see pilings from the original bridge. Well, how about that? Okay, resuming where we were. We were talking about the fourth bridge now. They're building the fourth bridge. Let's talk about the pedestrian bridge a little bit more. Did people actually use it in the way it was intended?
Yes. So when the bicycle path connecting town to the former Long Bridge was dedicated, it was dedicated by the Sandpoint Civic Club president, Joni Lett. She said, "A trip out across the old Long Bridge to gaze at the scenery is a treat that everyone will want to partake of time and time again. It's habit forming." And I love that. So the pedestrian bridge became a key part of many civic activities in the following decades. So yes, it definitely was embraced by the community. In fact, in 1986, Sandpoint joined a National Hands Across America event and called upon 2,000 residents to create a human chain that spanned across the entire bridge. It was a fundraiser for the food bank. And very fascinating, right? And are there photos in the museum of that?
I've never seen photos, but if it's in 86, then there probably were photos taken.
It's impressive. That's the second chain we've done historically in town, isn't it?
I remember the book.
Yeah, the book chain. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I know what you're talking about. Yeah, the library, the handoff there. Something to talk about some other time. Yeah.
Indeed. So in 1988, Skip Pucci led a project to liven up the bridge with planters of evergreen trees, and they were sponsored by different grade schools in the area. I love that. So I'm familiar with the planters, but I just never knew the history of how that came about and who sponsored it.
Mm-hmm. And not to worry about the ospreys, Jack. The fourth bridge was built with special pilings specifically intended for osprey and geese to build nests upon.
So there we are, the fourth bridge, and it's now built, and that's the one we're driving on today.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Some people probably listening are driving across the Long Bridge. Did you know it was the fourth one?
There was also an article in the Daily Bulletin, November 30th, 1987. "To the person who has been living in Sandpoint and has been away on a trip, there is a certain point in the return when it is really official that home has been reached, the crossing of the Long Bridge across the Ponderay River. Since 1909, the bridge has been a critical link between the North and the South Shores and an easily recognized symbol of Sandpoint." And back to every oral history, I remember, starts with, "We crossed over the Long Bridge and we knew we were home." And I had that feeling too. And in fact, the second time, I even had a soundtrack that I had teed up right when we hit that first moment. So it was a full body experience when you were crossing it.
What'd you play?
I love soundtracks from very like theatrical movies. So I think it was like Downton Abbey.
Cool.
Very high energized.
The fourth bridge, and does that kind of wrap up the Odyssey? Is that?
Yeah. I mean, there was a lot, like I said, there was a lot more documentation on the early bridges because the town of Sandpoint and therefore the local newspapers were a lot more involved in the construction. And I think they did use local crews for the third and fourth bridges as well. But, you know, just being managed by the Army Corps, there isn't as much in our archives that documents how the planning process went. Like, we had all of those, you know, little disagreements and negotiations over the first two bridges.
What about you two? What was your first experience encountering that bridge?
I do remember, I don't know if it was the first time, but maybe the first time coming across it, like in the day or something, and being kind of amazed. Definitely being amazed by it, by you kind of come out of the trees and over that wide open space of water, and you kind of think, I can't believe this is, this seems like it should be world famous, and to some extent, I suppose it is. But yeah, it's an incredible, just drive that coming across the Long Bridge is something something that everybody should experience. And it's funny how we just get used to it, and it becomes just kind of part of the commute for so many people. But it is, it's very special. How about you, Anna?
Well, I first came to town on the train in the middle of the night. I didn't have my car when I first came here, so it took a while for me to actually cross the bridge. So I don't think it was as dramatic as it is for most people, but I'm sure I still had that moment of awe when you
arrived by train, yeah. Which is pretty incredible.
Yeah, I took the Amtrak from Chicago. It was not as exciting of a trip as I expected. As soon as you hit the mountains, it's suddenly dark, and then you don't get to see Glacier or Sandpoint as you come in. But
it may be a different passenger train experience than what people had experienced in the 1900s.
Yeah, I imagine so. Yeah. I got to hang out with a lot of miners and chat about oil drilling. So
that's great.
It was kind of fun.
Maybe not too different.
Coming in by train is always an experience. I came up like Highway 200, so I didn't have to go over the Long Bridge. So it was not right away that I went over the Long Bridge. That's why I think I was kind of surprised, because I had been to Sandpoint before, and then here's this, you know, this breathtaking bridge that's just part of the highway.
Mm-hmm.
We mentioned, so it was constructed by the Army Corps of Engineers. I think last time, Heather, you mentioned built by the Army Corps, but it's actually owned by Bonner County.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and maintained by the Idaho Transportation Department.
That's right.
Okay, and holding hands. There we are, hand in glove, everybody working working in harmony together to keep these bridges up. Let's see.
Well,
we're done yeah, with the
Jack,
Long Bridge experience.
I can't get enough of these bridges because they have become an indelible part of, you know, my experience here in Sandpoint, as we all spoke about. But I can't get out of my mind the fact that Halloween is approaching us. And just all of the fascinating spiritual activity around Sandpoint just has me buzzing.
tell us more about what's on your mind, the spiritual activity.
Well, everybody asks about ghost stories or even a ghost tour. And that is something that I know will happen in this community. But in the meanwhile, we had some fun diving down into the depths of the newspapers, and I was able to unearth some fascinating stories about the spiritual encounters here, including not a psychic, but...
Are you thinking about the stories that were published after the spiritual consultant came to Sandpoint?
Why, yes!
This sounds excellent. Let's take a pause here. Now that we've finished talking about the Long Bridge, come back and talk about some ghost stories that you guys managed to dig up from the newspaper. And I'm going to play a little music. This is a gentleman named K.T. Smith. I'm not actually sure if he's still around, but about 8 years ago or so, he dropped off a CD at the radio station. Of his own original music, and much of it is it's all kind of spooky and a lot of it kind of haunting and relates to some of our local features. This one is called Selly Road, and again, it's K.T. Smith, and I'm going to play it right now. When we return, some local ghost stories from around town. You're listening to the Community Character Hour on Panhandle Community Radio.
On a full moon night, she walks in the light out on Selly Road. A girl my dreams all alone, it seems she wanders there all alone. In a flowing white dress and the flowers caress her hair of braided gold. And she searches in vain for the souls that remain out on Selly Road. Out on Selly Road. In the graveyard out there, the devil, you swear, lives out on Selly Road. And if given chance, the devil will dance to possess her very soul. And deep underground you can hear the sound of the souls on Selly Road as they wait for him from the fire within, out on Selly Road, out on Selly Road. And they say the Pack River, a chill it delivers, carried by midnight fog, to the souls who live there, or hang here, or buried deep in the sod. And a church bell rings and the spirits do sing, it's time for us to arise, from out of the grave, moonlight, yellow haze, into the revived, into the revived. On a full moon night, she walks the light
of Selly Road. We have guessed. The album was Voices from the Well. I don't have a year on it, but I would say, I think it came out about 10 years ago or something like that. And just a gentleman
doing his, I think he just kind of self-produced it. It took a microphone and went into the basement and recorded an album of haunting stories.
Wow.
And most of them locally based. Anyway.
I'll certainly feel differently driving down Selly Road now after hearing that.
Spooky, spooky stuff, yeah. I tend to play that one around Halloween every year. Speaking of, you're listening to the Community Character Hour. Heather Upton and Hannah Combs are here. I'm Jake Peterson. And we're talking, we have talked about the Long Bridge enough. Let's talk a little bit about haunted Sandpoint, haunted North Idaho. And you guys were able to dig up three excellent articles. This one, the Bob Gunter and Dave Gunter did a great job of putting together a kind of a tour of town in the Daily Bee in 2007.
Mm-hmm. A very deep tour.
Yeah.
Yes.
So
back in 2007, an anonymous spiritual consultant, not to be confused with a psychic, did a tour of Sandpoint with the intent to verify and further understand Sandpoint's ghostly encounters. As the paper stated, she was not given any details regarding the ghost stories or past history associated with the places she visited. She simply entered, remained quiet for a time, and when ready, talked about what she was feeling.
Mm. Dun, dun, dun. So I think that's the thing. What we're going to be sharing with you today is these are experiences that many people still feel every day here in this community. And I think one of the most infamous places, It's such an important cultural center here, but if you can guess.
I would guess you're going to say the Panada Theater.
So, Jack, it sounds like you have some firsthand experiences with these. There's not just one ghost, but a few.
I don't really have a very good ghost story to tell. I haven't seen anything exactly. Just kind of a hair on the back of the neck, prickly kind of a feeling.
Like you're not alone.
That kind of thing. Yeah. Anyway.
What did the psychic feel about the Panada?
We're not alone. There is an entity here that associated so much of what they did with who they are that even death could not break that. There is a very definite male energy here, very strong. My sense is that in life, he was a good-sized man, hardy. He loved to play act, and he became the character he played. He could feel like a threatening presence, but truth is, never hurt a soul. What I can tell you is that there has been what we're going to call an acceptance. He couldn't change things. Therefore, he allows them. He has fun with the people who come here now. He doesn't try to push them away anymore.
Oh, my gosh. spine chilling. So I have definitely from people heard about this male entity that kind of lives up in the balcony. I've seen a face, kind of an orb-like face in a selfie photo in the balcony. I've also, I've had a few people like hear his voice and just definitely feel his presence up there.
Well, if it's a male entity, it makes me wonder, and it's been seen in the balcony, it makes me wonder if it might be connected to Mayor Gray, Floyd Gray,
yes,
who performed Farmer Gray back in the, during the Depression.
Mm-hmm.
And so he lived in the,
that's right,
in what is now the offices of the Panada on the second floor. That was his apartment.
Really?
At the time that he was mayor, mm-hmm, of Sandpoint.
Mm-hmm. And he was also an artist. All of the murals up there are from him.
Oh, I don't know about that.
Which are incredible.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. And he would do these beautiful posters, and they were all hand painted. I mean, it felt like he put his heart and soul into it from the research and from what we hear. So
maybe his soul is still there.
Still watching over the Panada, entertaining everyone. I have also heard from multiple people that the dressing room downstairs towards the back, mm-hmm, kind of has like a female energy. Hannah, had you ever experienced that when you're...
I haven't, but we've talked about this before. I don't ever feel the ghosts that you do. So I've just been not attuned to the ghostly presence down there.
So Hannah, would you say you're more of a skeptic?
Not necessarily. I just there are many people in my life who have had experiences with ghosts. I'm just missing out. They don't come knocking on my window at night. So I just haven't experienced them firsthand.
Okay. Heather, you are not a skeptic.
No, I feel like, mm-hmm, I'm with them all the time. I'm one of those people. So, but I'm not freaked out by it. Like, I embrace it. And I feel like we're all living together, just maybe in different planes.
Mm. What about you, Jack?
I don't know. Try to keep an open mind. But I have no, I think it depends on the time of year, what I'm feeling. And at this spooky time of year, it's, you know, you tend to think there might be something creeping around that you can't quite explain.
The thing that always happens to me that always tends to be unexplainable are the flickering of lights when I enter a room. And
I have witnessed this firsthand. They do flicker for Heather.
It's really distracting, especially like when I am in the museum, it's like really active. And then when I get excited, the lights get really excited too. And it's hard to hold meetings in there.
It's bizarre.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it usually happens in historic structures. I also have been debunked by an electrician that says it typically happens with dimmers.
Yeah.
And when I look over, all the lights have dimmer switches. So. Yeah,
that's true.
But yeah. I like to think that I'm special. So yeah. We'll keep rolling with the previous.
Our listener calls in with either a correction or an addition. It was the original builder, Frank Weskel, who lived in above the Panada, is what he said.
Oh.
Just FYI.
Okay.
And we might have to do some updating of our archives.
I think he would. This is the kind of guy who would probably know.
Okay. I love this listener.
Yeah.
Yeah. He tune in every time.
He's obviously, he's paying close attention too.
There's always room for correction.
Yeah. It's cool that that's an apartment though. I wish it was the mayor's apartment instead of somebody else. It should be property, you know, it should be like the mayor's, like Gracie Mansion. Right?
I love that.
In New York. It should
be. You get to live above the historic theater.
You get to live above the Panada Theater if you're the mayor of Sandpoint.
Definitely would be a perk.
Yes.
So we have more. The journey continues.
So we've talked about the Panada. That's there's several ghosts there, we think.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. I understand. A lot of people locking up quickly, running out of that building. So we are so lucky in our community to have a structure that still remains, that's part of our old town site. And I bet you all can guess.
I'm going to go with the train depot.
Yes. So many people have experienced things there. Hannah, what did the psychic experience?
Well, if the people who live near here have any sensitivity at all, they're feeling activity from this building. They're here at night, old spirits, and not just one or two. They come and go. You have all kinds of entities here, men, women, children, from different eras and all walks of life. All of them are trying to get home, but they'll never get home. They keep passing through, making the same journey every night.
Oh, my.
Well, I like the acting that you're putting into this. Or the,
she's an amazing storyteller. Yes,
it's not me. It's the spiritual consultant.
It's coming right through, yes.
Pure transcription.
The train depot, yeah. That's cool.
Well, you see photos of, you know, people going off to war, right? And then people arriving home. Like, I think some of the most remarkable moments that people experience could be part of that, right?
Yeah, I mean, and how many people have gone through the Sandpoint Train Depot over the years? It's going back to 1909. It's been...
Yeah, tens of thousands.
Yeah. Right? Gotta be, at least. Yeah. More even.
And if you think back in the day, you know, waiting at the train depot, no one had cell phones to give updates on, like, oh, I'm in Bonner's Ferry. Oh, I'm in, you know,
yeah,
I'm 20 minutes out. You know, you're just waiting and hoping that the train's on time and hoping that the person you're waiting for is on the train. And if they're not, you have to write letters or a telegram to figure out where they are and why they're held up.
A lot of emotional energy just left there. A lot of people died with the tracks and the train. And there's a lot of stories about people getting tragically run over by the train, too.
Well, you think about how dangerous train tracks are today. But in the original town site of Sandpoint, the railroad track ran straight down the middle of the main street. So if you wanted to go from a store on one side of the road to a store on the other side, you had to go up and over the tracks to get there.
Risking your life every time. Was there one person that still is waiting?
Indeed. The spiritual consultant says, there's a woman here. She's waiting for her husband to return, and he won't. He never did. She came here every day for every train that had passengers, until she died. My sense is that she didn't last long, less than a year. She died of a broken heart.
I like to connect her to the woman that had the hotel burn and then the bones were found.
Yeah.
Back to our, just wrapping us up in a neat bow to our original episode, right?
Or the
first
stories.
Or second. A lot of women waiting.
That's right. Yeah. Refer back to a previous episode when we were talking about hotels, but that was a good story too.
That was.
Had some
a little spooky
element to it. Yeah.
Yeah. We try to put a face to some of these experiences, right? Who were these people wanting to know the depths?
That's the train depot. Have you guys ever had any experiences at the depot? Hannah, you came to town.
I don't remember any ghosts when I got off the train.
I picture Hannah riding amongst all of these people, but it was just her.
Ooh, that would be really spooky. Yeah. I mean, it was, you know, you get off the train at what, midnight?
Yeah.
2 a.m. sometime in there.
Depends on if it's on time, yeah.
You never know if you're sleepwalking or seeing ghosts or, I don't know.
There's an energy in that space, though, for sure. I felt that. Definitely.
I have.
Not negative, but. Yeah.
Peeked in the windows and I can see ghosts in the building. I couldn't see them.
You could
but
imagine.
But I could imagine that there might be.
Like, wait a second.
No, they hide from me.
Well, it's been. I think it was, I remember before they did the latest renovation, and I think it had a little bit more creaky and spooky before. Now it's very well lit and nicely updated and furnished. I think it's it may have lost some of that spookiness, but not necessarily a bad thing to lose your spookiness as, you know, as time goes by. Okay, that's the train depot. What other buildings in town have?
Yeah, we have that beautiful block on First, right, of our historic buildings that are pretty true to form. And so there's this one particular building down there that has a legendary little girl. So this would be the Byrne Building. And historically, up above, it was the Lincoln Hotel. So a lot of times there was the hotel or living quarters above, with those two-story brick front buildings, and you had commercial down below. So those buildings just have a history of people, you know, shopping there, living there, and so forth. So this one has a little deeper history, Hannah.
I'm sensing and feeling things here, but I don't feel a presence. Not like in the theater, where he was right there with us. I can tell you, there was a lot of laughter in this building, and there were a lot of tears. I sense that there were women for sale up here. Some of them were very young, as far as age goes, in their teens. But it was not just an ordinary brothel. There was class here.
Wow.
Yeah. Sure, a classy brothel. That's
With teenagers, I don't think so. Right.
Okay, the Byrne Building.
Yeah, that's hard to associate class with. Young brothel. Well, what's interesting? So the story about this little to go a little deeper. So this building has been through a series of owners and remodels, and then it was completely restored as Coldwater Creek Retail. And now we know it as Meadowbrook today. So they talk about how it was once the home of the Lincoln Hotel, and that it was served as a brothel. And so there were, and then down below there was lots of slot machines, and it was just packed with ladies. So apparently, I love this because a lot of people that we know in Treasure Today were interviewed back in the day on this article. So this Chris Contour, who was a local architect, he had an office upstairs, and he said apparently there was always the same story that so it was a house of ill repute and there were lots of ghosts. But at the time when he was working on that building, it was just, you know, bare frames, transom windows, and kind of the original character, but that he would experience a female presence lurking and kind of throughout. And a former tenant said a past owner gave him a key to the front door and explained that the light switch at the bottom of the stairs no longer worked and cautioned him to be extremely careful at night. So when he would have to make the steep climb into the dark up to the top floor, there was a little light switch, a toggle that he would turn on, and that would actually activate an overhead light towards the top. And he was told to always remember to say hi to the girl who lives upstairs before entering and then leaving, say goodbye. So just to be sure to let her know you're friendly and she'll share that space with you. And apparently this was an experience that many people had, and the article lands on this last person. So this was Ned Brandenberger of the Sandpoint property management. So the story was that the young woman was murdered up there at some point. So it looks like they kind of got to some historical understanding. Or legend. And he said, we leased the entire upper floor to a professional, and they said they could hardly stand to be up there. And they finally moved out. And when we got it got so bad that they were hanging Tibetan prayer flags up on the walls to ward off any of those negative spirits.
This is all really interesting to me. And I need to do some more digging, because it would be really unusual to have a what sounds like a gambling area. Yes. And a brothel right in the middle of First Avenue like that.
Because that was like the better part of town.
Well,
right?
Yeah. When they started platting that part of town on the west side of the creek, that was one of the big goals was of the city mothers and fathers was to kind of banish all of the gambling and saloons mm-hmm. and brothels back to the old part of town so that their side of town could be more upstanding and respectable. Mm-hmm. So it would be really strange to have a space as it has been described in that location.
Well, and you wonder, like, so it, they're like, well, it must have been a brothel or, mm-hmm. you know, or the person, this young girl must have been murdered. You know, it's like you'll never know the history mystery. Yeah. And I think that's part of the intoxicating part is like the wonder.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know what I like? I like the owner handing off the key to the new tenant.
Yeah. Saying, I can picture like a skeleton key.
By the way, it's haunted. Be sure to say hi to the girl who lives upstairs. Oh, and this light switch at the bottom of the stairs? That doesn't work.
So you have to walk up
the stairs in the dark, and then at the top of the stairs, turn it on. And those stairs go up like...
Yeah.
That's a tall building. Yeah.
Like, here's a rosary while you're at it.
I love the implication of, I know I'm the landlord, but I'm not fixing the light. So you get to deal with all of this, too.
Well, and Ned is interviewed quite often, and a lot of the stories come from... Mm-hmm. And Chris, too. So Chris is, you know, he's an architect. So he's renovating buildings, and that's when a lot of activity starts to kind of arise. Mm-hmm. And then to think about... Yeah, I mean, someone that manages properties, of course he would hold all the stories. So mm-hmm. we might need to do like a then and now with Ned mm-hmm. and Chris.
Yeah.
That's not a bad idea. Let's check in. Okay, so the burned building is haunted, or it was anyway.
Yeah, I haven't had anybody come up and tell me any stories recently about that. But yeah, now I want to go.
Yeah. Right. Well, and a lot has happened since then. It's, you know, it's no longer anything like that kind of, in the kind of gutted hotel that it was in, you know, at the time that of this, this story.
Yeah. It's maybe like, there was a release during the
It's
been restoration process.
Renovated quite a bit.
Wouldn't that be something like rehabilitate mm-hmm. your building and rehabilitate its soul? I don't
mm-hmm. Is that a new program?
Yeah, I want. Well, maybe they do the burning sage thing. You walk around. Maybe that really works. Maybe it's renovate the building.
Nothing
they walk
like a
through
good
with
cleanse.
Sage, and then it's there. You go.
Okay. So another iconic building. This building was purpose built as our post office, and it served as our library.
Mm-hmm.
Many people signed their life away in the basement when it was recruiting office for
the National Guard.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, during World War II, is that correct?
And a little earlier.
Earlier, yeah. Mm-hmm. So a lot of activity in this building. Mm-hmm. Let's hear what the psychic had to say.
What I'm sensing about this building is that a lot of underground things happened. Not everything that went on here was legal and up front. Very few people knew about it. A lot of secrets in this building. So many secrets. I'm picking up that there was some torture in this basement. Some people died here on purpose. They were murdered. Just so many secrets down here. Whoa.
Wow. Okay.
Whoa.
That's quite a...
That's pretty eerie. I'm getting the tingles right now.
Mm-hmm.
So now every time I see Mickey and Duffy, who now own the building and have done a beautiful restoration on it, I ask them, have you been experiencing that energy down? And they say, no, they have not.
Now, I know we've both been on tours of the building with Mickey. Have you ever felt anything down there?
I feel like the boiler room, definitely. Like, it feels heavy.
That might be because there's a 8-ton boiler in there. But I get what you mean.
See, this is why you're not experiencing the ghosts. Mm-hmm. You got to kind of let loose.
Lean into it.
Lean into it, right? But yeah, so, but again, you know, who knows, right? Jack, mm-hmm. have you been in the basement of that building?
I never have. No, I've never taken that tour. But I mean, I know the vintage, it's another building from the 20s mm-hmm. and I have been in other basements from that, about that era.
Well, you have a historic home, right?
Yeah. It's not on the register or anything like that, but yeah, it's built in 1920 originally.
Yeah.
And I have spent plenty of time crawling around underneath that house, running new pipes and wires and stuff. And it's not always pleasant.
Does it have copper pipes?
Not anymore.
Okay.
No, it had, and it's, you're just trying to kind of go down there. It's actually sitting on the house sits on a one big log, basically one tree trunk that runs the whole length of the house, right? That's in the middle incredible. Of it. I had no idea that it was down there at all, but
that's quite a foundation.
Yeah. And that's right under, or that's. So it's got your classic, you know, concrete foundation around the outside, but right in the middle is basically like a tree set over on its side that supports the center
That's
of
incredible.
The house and that the old chimney used to sit on.
And no ghosts.
No ghosts.
Okay.
No, yeah. nothing yet anyway. Yeah.
So wait, do ghosts like copper pipes? Did I pick up on that?
Well, you know, you think about some of the original materials that were made, but then, yeah, there is like some energy conductive things. Okay. But my mind just wanders too, because the federal building has all the original metal.
Oh, pipes. Exposed.
Yeah, exposed, mm-hmm. which is really neat. So you just like mm-hmm. wonder, like, where are those synergetic moments mm-hmm. there? But one of my, there are some great residential home stories. One of my favorite, though, this is a little bit outside of Sandpoint. So, and Hannah, correct me if I'm wrong, but so this is an amazing museum volunteer that told me the story, and I'll never forget it. And so this house is historic. It was across the way from the Humbird Lumber Company, mm-hmm. and it was the foreman's house, and beautiful, historic, two-story home. She ran a daycare. And the kids were constantly talking to this older gentleman. Mm. She'd walk into the room and she'd smell like some sort of pipe smoke. Mm. But again, like she just kind of embraced it and felt like it wasn't like a negative energy. And the house came with many of the original artifacts to when the foreman had that home. And again, this is around the turn of the century. And there was this teapot that was on the stove. And she'd move it off the stove and it would appear back on there. And she was just kept saying to her husband, "Will you please stop putting the teapot back on the stove?" In fact, there were times when they get kind of in a tiff about it because he's like, "I didn't move it." And she's like, "No, I mean, obviously mm-hmm. you did." So one day she decided to have a yard sale and she put the teapot out there. Someone saw the teapot, purchased it. The teapot left the premise. The next morning she woke up, the teapot was back on the stove.
No.
She has never moved that teapot since, and everybody is fine.
Because she didn't move the teapot again.
So I think like the, like, I mean, what did we learn, Jack? That we can all be together, but it's just a matter of making sure that we're all kind of coexisting respectfully, like, okay, like a little give and take. I won't touch your teapot. Please don't, you know, cause me any harm.
The haunted teapot.
The haunted teapot.
I blame the husband. I think it was him.
Yeah.
It's just a prank that maybe went a little too far and now he's committed.
Right.
So now he can't, you know, now he can't stop.
So yeah. the interesting thing, though, about the ghost story is there's probably only there's three strong articles in the newspaper archives. And so I think like this is our opportunity since we've had an active listener today, which I love. Mm-hmm. Please reach out to us if you've experienced any paranormal behavior, whether it's in one of our historic downtown buildings, important site, or in your home.
That would be that'd be very interesting. It's not exactly something that you would put in the under the purview of like the historical society, because this is where, you know, we're talking about.
Well,
the realm of the metaphysical or whatever.
But we may have had this debate before,
right? Yeah, what counts as history? But
there again, could be like else? A section like paranormal cryptics.
Yeah. But who else would it be if not the historical society to
sometimes history is legendary as
folklore
well.
Folklore is a part of it's under the history umbrella.
Good point.
Yeah.
There's
just like a disclaimer attached to it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. It would be very interesting to learn, especially if you had a feeling the house you just moved into was haunted. It'd be great to go to the museum and
find out.
Oh, yes, it is.
That has happened. And back in the day, this woman came in. Mm-hmm. The way she was asking questions, I just came right out and peeled back that layer. And I was like, do you have a ghost? And I mean, I canceled every meeting that I had that day. I was like, would you like a cup of tea? Uh-huh. Like, come sit down and share. So, I mean, I don't know, Hannah, if you've experienced that, but I have facilitated some research requests trying to figure out who lived in that home to try to help like pacify maybe an entity that might be like going into and taking over people.
Well, I think you're kind of my on-call ghost interpreter these days. If someone comes in with a ghost request, I'm like, I know who you need to talk to.
Thank you. I do appreciate that. That definitely gets me buzzing. But this whole like ghosts and the other side is not just, you know, me being super excited. This actually goes back historically. And Hannah, wasn't there like a huge occult kind of popularity during the Victorian era?
Yeah. Public interest in the occult peaked during the Victorian era when... So this is a time when scientific theory was becoming mainstream, but religion was also a big part of most people's lives. And so people began trying to use the scientific method to understand and even communicate with metaphysical and spiritual entities. These activities were particularly popular among high society and became central to some social events. And if you think about those occult activities occurring in Europe in the late 1800s, it makes sense that a couple of decades later, its popularity would find its way across rural America. Though there's very little documentation of people in North Idaho engaging directly with the occult at this time. I mean, who would have had the energy really after, you know, running businesses or doing farm chores all day? But the newspapers certainly reflect a fascination with all things supernatural. From 1900 to 1920, there are over 100 different serial stories that mention the word ghost.
This is like a serial, like a, well, in a newspaper, a serial is released over a few weeks to kind of build interest as time goes by. It's sort of a throwback, a thing, you know. Yeah, throwback
so
to the past.
Maybe not in like the newly platted area because they were focused on making sure they were building churches and being very proper, but possibly on the other side of the tracks.
Maybe.
Some seances, maybe in the Palace Hotel.
Before it burned down. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe it burned down because of it.
We can imagine. So just like today, people couldn't get enough of the supernatural. One of my favorite personal ads that I've ever read in the paper reads, "Elderly lady, partially invalid, requires companion. One who has traveled or can tell good ghost stories is preferred."
That's like me when I'm 90.
Okay.
I hope she found that.
I hope so, too.
Yeah.
And there was also, so this was also the time when photography and cameras were first beginning to become popular among the general public. A newspaper article presented by Scientific American and shared in the local paper in 1913 instructs how to create a, they call it a ghost fake photograph using double exposure. Oh. It says, an appropriate scene would be a deserted churchyard with your model posing in an awestruck attitude beside a tomb.
That's so amazing.
I really hope we someday dig up some ghost photos in our archives, and
you'll be debunking them.
We'll never know if they're real or if they were ghost fakes.
Oh yeah, well yeah, we've done a few newsletters where we've been like, well, that looks like a specter. So much fun. We could do a whole 4 episodes on this. We're still sharing our ghost history and finding new. I know the Music Conservatory Saturday and Sunday just had this incredible opera honoring their ghost, Olivia. And Karen and her team did such an amazing job going into the archives and finding out who this individual was historically and how she was originally part of an opera house here. And Hannah, you know more about that, but I love how we're having fun celebrating our history, but in a very entertaining fashion as well.
Yeah. And I'm excited to hopefully soon connect with the Music Conservatory and get the full scoop on Olivia the ghost. But yeah, anyone else who has ghost stories, we always love to hear them and help you write them down and save them for the future.
In the folklore area.
Yeah, maybe not verified history, but folklore, definitely.
We're running short on time here. In fact, we're just about out. It's almost time for us to turn things over. Real quick, Heather, what's happening at City Hall these days? What's going on in the city of Sandpoint?
Not a lot of ghosts, but we're really excited because we have our Paint the Plows naming reveal. So we're coming to a close. Make sure to come down to Miller Paint Bucket and the museum and put your idea for names down, and the Streets guys are going to be naming them. It will be announced at a upcoming council meeting. We also are going to be revealing at council who the selected silver box artists are. We just are completing that cycle and in terms of selections, and we'll be announcing and installing those coming up. So you'll see new art on loan, which is really exciting. And then we also encourage everybody to continue to take the surveys on the residential call for information. We want to know more about the history of your home. All of this information will be recorded in the museum's archives. We prompt ghost stories for that as well. So please participate.
What's going on at the museum, Hannah?
Yeah, well, we're very excited to be a part of a much bigger event. The Carousel of Smiles is bringing the carousel back to the fairgrounds on Saturday, November 23rd from 10 a.m. until 4 p.m. As a part of that, they are also hosting a nonprofit fun fair. So the museum will have a booth at that event, as well as a lot of other nonprofits in town. We're excited to be celebrating the beginning of the holiday season and seeing the horses back in action on the carousel. So again, that's Saturday, November 23rd at the fairgrounds.
Do we know what we're doing next time on the Community Character Hour? Do we know what our next story is?
It's going to be the fun surprise.
Okay. A little tune in next month for another edition of the Community Character Hour. Heather Upton, you are the Arts and Historic Preservation Planner for the City of Sandpoint. Yes.
Thank you for having me, Jack.
And Hannah Combs, of course, the Executive Director of the Bonner County Historical Society and Museum.
Always a pleasure to be here.
And my name is Jack Peterson. It's time for Bird Note.
And thanks for listening to Panhandle Community Radio. We're here two Mondays a month with the Community Character Hour, talking about local history and sometimes local folklore, too, it turns out. And we'll turn it over to Bird Note. And thanks again for tuning in.
In my dreams of the night, in the full light, she wanders there all alone. This girl in my dreams that she's waiting for me out on Selly Road.